Warning, the Stone Age Gamer includes a lot of bad language. Cover your mother f***ing ears.
Good evening and welcome to episode 222 of the Stone Age Gamer podcast for the week of October 5th, 2018. I am Chris Randazzo and with me, as always, is Visage of Death, Dan Ryan.
On my birthday, Chris.
On your birthday.
Hell yeah. Oh, yeah.
Visage of birth, Dan Ryan.
There you go. Yay. That doesn't sound nearly as tough. You're right. Go back to the other one. It's way more metal.
October is upon us, and with it is Geekade's 31 Days of Halloween. In the interest of maintaining an air of spookiness about us, Dan and I are going to be talking about our favorite video game, Grim Reapers. But before we go any further, here's your weekly reminder that you can email us at mail@geekade.com. Just include the word Stone Age Gamer in the subject line. You can let us know what you think of our show, what topics you would like us to discuss in the future, or just say hello, because we always want to hear from you, the listener. So, Dan, how are you?
I'm good, Chris. I had a, today is my birthday. We are actually recording on my birthday. So, you know, I had a good day. I played hooky from work and took the family up to the Liberty Science Center in beautiful Jersey City, which I'm not even being facetious about. I really like Jersey City, and Liberty Science Center is a good time. So we went up and hung out there, and they have the coolest thing about it, because, you know, it's a science center, and what's interesting is that, you know, we go to the Franklin Institute in Philly, we go to the Danville Science Center in Virginia, and there's another one we've been to in North Carolina when we go on vacation and whatnot, and some of the same installations are at multiple science centers. So apparently there is a science center installation depot that you can just purchase your thing from, and like, oh, we're going to talk about nanos for a year and a half, and like, that's what you have. So that's kind of silly. But this one, the Liberty Science Center, Chris, I don't know if you know this. I don't know what this has to do with video games, but I would like to play video games on the screen, I think. Has the biggest planetarium in the Western Hemisphere.
Hmm.
And the fifth largest in the world. So watching like the space movie that we saw, and that was really cool. It was a good time. And I got a lot of cool presents. You know?
Well, congrats.
It's fun.
Well,
we haven't even finished Spider-Man, and I now own Shadow of the Tomb Raider. So it's like, okay, we'll just jump right into that one as well. I can't wait. I'm really excited about it.
I know you are. And well, you should be. You are a fan of said raiding of tombs.
Now, let me ask you a question, Chris.
Okay.
I got the Steelbook edition of Shadow of the Tomb Raider. And you know I'm not normally big on physical purchases, but for as a birthday present, you don't want to be like, here's a digital download code. Like, that's not really a thing that you can wrap. What do you think about the Steelbooks? Are you a fan? Do you think it's just a gimmick, a waste?
I'm not entirely sure what's different about a Steelbook other than the case is not made of plastic.
Yeah, that's really about it.
Oh,
It's a little, well, like, it's thicker, it looks different on the shelf, like, it stands out and looks more impressive.
See, there's kind of my problem with Steelbooks. Mm-hmm. So, like, the only Steelbooks I ever truly considered, like, really thought about, I'm going to put some money into this, I'm going
right.
to do this, was the Star Wars movies.
Sure.
But then I'd have to do all of them in Steelbook, because I'm you know, they just kind of mess everything up and looking so much different from everything else. I like it when things look uniform.
Right.
So, yeah, and then I had to, like, wrestle with, like, okay, but do I also get episodes 1, 2, and 3? Because I kind of hate 2 and 3, like, a lot.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
I don't want to spend money on them, but, like, there are things I like about 1, and the covers all look really nice, but I can't just get 1, 4, 5, 6, and beyond. Then they all have to match. And what if they change the packaging for the Steelbooks and like the typeface and everything for episodes 8 and 9? I just kind of talked myself out of the whole thing. With yes. video games, though, there's kind of like universal uniformity with video games. So I would You know, like when they released Mario Kart on Wii U, it was not in a blue case. It was in a red case.
Right.
And so I took out my red case and got a blue case from my local store to replace it with. Because that drove me crazy.
Just seeing that one case different.
Maximum Carnage, Doom. Killer Instinct. Why?
Killer Instinct is black, right?
Killer Instinct is black. Doom and Maximum Carnage were red. And geez, N64, you know, N64, you know. Good thing I don't like sports games all that much. But yeah, there was all manner of different colored things. It's one of the reasons I don't collect Famicom games. Because they're not even shaped the same. It's like, I think my only exception on that rule is Atari, just because that's what it is. But yeah, so steelbooks for me, it's gonna be that's gonna be a no, unless I can get a solid chunk that is very specifically, this is my steelbook collection. Like if it was just one game.
That's fair.
I would go out of my mind with just one game.
Now, what about the NES Legend of Zelda and Zelda 2? The gold cartridges, do those bother you?
Not so much.
Because there are both versions of both, right?
There are, yeah. And of course I have them because I'm a Looney Tune.
Of course
but,
you do.
Those don't bother me because there's two of them and you can put them right at the end. And here are my two Zelda games with the letter Z.
Right.
And, you know, there's not many NES games that come after that alphabetically. I mean, I'm trying to think of other Z games besides Zanac and I'm drawing a blank. But yeah, those were because there's two of them, and it's like, and those are my shiny gold Zelda games.
Okay.
Yeah. So as long as there's like a subset, so when you get to the Tengen games, for example, I don't file them alphabetically. I'll file them all alphabetically together. Like there's my set of Tengen titles, and that's how it's gonna roll. Like when I eventually get my Atari shelves up, I'm gonna be organizing the cartridges by cartridge style, which is kind of fun, just because they're like little individual subsets.
Sure.
And, you know, different companies had their own different flavors. So, you know, you'll get all the Data Age games or whatever, and they'll all look, you know, the same, similar to one another, all the Activision titles and so and so forth. So.
All right, then.
Yeah.
Yeah. I don't nearly have enough physical merchandise to display anymore. So I think like I personally thought this one was really cool. Like, and I'm happy that I have it, but I know what you mean. Like when I got the Indiana Jones, Blu-ray set, like the box set that it came out.
And it's just a little bit deeper than everything else.
It's not even a little bit. It's so much bigger than the rest. Like, it's so much bigger.
What the hell? It doesn't need to be.
Nuts.
It doesn't need to be.
Bananas.
Ugh. Yeah. Anyway. So, hey, well, all right. That was fun. Mm-hmm. Now you got me all riled up about that Indiana Jones set again. I'm looking at it right now. I got all my Blu-rays in a drawer. In the bottom of my entertainment center that's got childproof so my kids don't get to them. I'm like, man, that freaking Indiana Jones set. Because it was on like super sale on Amazon. I got it for like $20 for the whole set for Blu-ray. I'm like, all right, that's cool. That's fantastic. But then I put it on my shelf.
I'd pay that like, just for Raiders. I mean,
$20 is definitely worth it for Raiders. And then slap on a Last Crusade, my personal favorite. And well,
that's Tiff's favorite too.
Yeah, it's a great movie. It's hard to argue with superior, but I think for me, it's because I saw that one first.
Yeah.
So,
well, that's
just where the nostalgia is. But they're both so freaking good. They're both really good.
Temple of Doom's badass, too. Anyway.
Not a fan.
And you know what? Not for nothing. I like Kingdom of the Crystal Skull.
Me too. I like it better than Temple of Doom.
It's just as good as the rest of them. Well, it's not just as good as the rest of them, but it is no more ridiculous than any other Indiana Jones movie.
I concur. But that's a podcast for another podcast.
Yeah. On another show, without question. Not on this one. Anyway.
Hot breaking news for your birthday. Toys R Us.
I heard.
Yeah.
Toys R Us no longer going bankrupt. Well, I mean, still bankrupt, but
no
reviving
longer
the
officially
brand?
Like they've decided to back out of the bankruptcy closing or whatever.
Yeah.
This seems like a really shady thing. Like, so we're going to close all our stores, we're going to fire all of our staff, we're going to sell off a bunch of our real estate, and they're going to be like, hey, never mind.
We're going to open some of them back up. I hope they do. Honestly, I hope they do.
I hope they do something. I hope they do it well. I mean, I hope they do something special with the brand, and I don't know what the status is with a lot of their locations, because it's strange. You see a big box store like that go out of business, and really quickly you'll see the for sale signs go up.
Right.
And both the Toys R Us and the Babies R Us around here, there are the lease signs are not up in either of those locations.
Yeah, there. I saw one when we were driving up today, on the turnpike, the one that's in Edison. Mm-hmm. When you drive by that, there's like the IKEA and
That one has a complex. That one has for lease on it.
But I don't know that I've seen it at the ones in Philly or Cherry Hill or Deptford. I'm not sure.
Because from what I've come to understand, their oldest stores, most of their really old stores, they actually own the real estate on. That was one of their things. I could be grossly wrong about this. This is something that somebody told me many years ago when I was working in retail at some sort of management meeting. Right. Is that one of the things that made Toys R Us so survivable for such a long time was that they weren't paying rent to anyone but themselves. Like, they owned a lot of their property, just why, when Kids R Us closed, they were staying afloat by renting it out to like Office Max and stuff like
right,
that.
Right. Right.
So, I don't know. This is an interesting bit of news. I would love, love, love to see Toys R Us come back in a really good and modern fashion that focuses on a great customer experience, because that's right. not what Toys R Us was before it went bankrupt. It was what it was when we were kids. Yeah. And I'd love to see that for my kids. I really would.
I would too. Like, it's not the same when, because it's coming up on Christmas time and we're trying to talk to the kids of like, what do you want for Christmas? What do you want to ask Santa Claus for? And what we used to do is we used to go to Toys R Us and give the kids, like, I would give one kid a phone, my wife would give the other kid a phone, and they would go around taking pictures of like, oh, I like that, I like that. And scrolling through pages on Amazon is just not the same.
And it's like, really not.
Yes, Target has toys, and yes, Walmart has toys, and we have in town a wonderful local toy shop. Like, it's just run by just a citizen of the town decided to open up a toy shop, and it's amazing. It's great. We spend way too much money in there, but it's not Toys R Us.
No, it's that's the problem. It's not Toys R Us. It's not that one. Here's a giant toy store. Here's a giant, official branded toy store of ridiculousness. Yeah. And nothing else is that. I don't have anything really around here.
I want it back. I really do.
As do I. I want it back.
Like, make sure there's product on the shelves at the time.
Yeah, that's pretty darn important. So, have you been playing anything of interest?
Continuing to play through Spider-Man.
Cool.
Which is just, we talked about it a little bit last week, but it is such an incredibly well done game. And like, anybody who's playing this game, and I don't want to like spoil anything yet, because I haven't even finished it yet, just because of life and whatever, and it being so much fun to go on the collectathon that is a large portion of this game, because as you're swinging through, it's like, oh look, here's another thing to go collect. Like, I got to go find all my backpacks, or like Harry left a bunch of science centers up, so I got to go do that, or like Black Cat left a bunch of places for me to take pictures, and it really is a giant collectathon for a lot of it. But when you start the game, you start off, you are working for Otto Octavius. He is not Doc Ock yet. He is just a scientist. But as you are progressing through the game, you are seeing the bits starting to come together where he is going to become Doc Ock. And it is so tragic the way that they're doing it, and it's so well written and so well acted and animated, and it is so heartbreaking. Like, as someone who knows, and like as we all do playing through, like, that's Otto Octavius. You're messing around with this thing that I know you're gonna become Doc Ock. You don't know that yet. And Peter doesn't know that yet, but we do. And it is fucking with me. Like, as we're sitting here, there was a moment that Tiff and I played last night where, as Peter, you go in and like you have to help Doc Ock like recalibrate things, and there's like little puzzles and stuff that you have to solve that are all pretty simplistic, but once you solve it, there's a bit of dialogue that comes after it where Octavius starts talking about how much better the neural interface will be with the arms from now on and how, like, what a benefit it could be to society. And, like, I just put the controller down and we just looked at each other like, ah, oh, damn it. Damn it, Otto. Like, oh, man, that sucks. You're going to go crazy. And, but, like, you're justified, but, but damn it. Like, it, dude, it's incredible. It's so, so good. I absolutely love it.
Yeah, I read, so we've got a new writer joining the site pretty soon, and he, the article that he wrote as, like, a submission was about a homeless woman that you help out in the beginning of the game, and then you can, it's a completely optional bit where you can just keep going back and checking in on her, and every time you check in on her, she's doing a little bit better in her life.
Yeah, yeah.
And that sounded really, really cool to me, so.
There's so many little things like that that are just so cool. Like, it's an incredibly well done game. And honestly, you know me, I thought there was no chance that anything was going to top God of War. I don't know yet. I don't know. Like, this is getting close to topping God of War as Game of the Year, which is stunning to me.
It's stunning to hear you say that, because you had made up your mind about God of War last year.
Yeah, no, I knew that. I think I even said that on the show last year when we did our Game of the Years. I was like, next year, we'll just call it now. And, like, as of right now, God of War is still there. But, man, this is really pushing it. It's really, really... And how awesome is that?
Yeah, true. How to get that... It's kind of like, for me, last year... getting Mario Odyssey and Zelda, you know, in the same
like,
year.
What a crazy thing.
Absolutely ridiculous. And I just, you can't knock Sony for that. You can knock Sony for a bunch of things.
Oh, sure.
But you can't knock Sony for their game output this year. I mean,
no, you really, really can't.
In a single year to have God of War and Spider-Man following up last year's Horizon is like, there's some really spectacular games on that platform.
Yeah, I totally understand why a game like Days Gone got pushed to, like, I think February. You know, because if you would have put it out now, like, it gets lost in the shuffle.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? There were too many big first party, too many big, you know, Shadow of the Tomb Raider. I haven't even played it yet. And I can't wait to play that game. You know, that, like, there's just so much.
Yeah, I heard earlier today that Toe Jam and Earl got delayed. And I'm like, thank God.
Yeah, really.
Thank God. I have so much left to do this year.
Yeah, I still have so much left to get through. And then I saw it was on your list. How much time did you get to spend with the Soul Calibur 6 network test?
Well, I spent about a half hour or so with it, and I got to play two matches.
Okay.
There was actually a bit of a story going into that. I remember mentioning to you that my PlayStation 4 stopped working.
Right.
And it actually didn't stop working. It was the update that was the problem. There was a 6.0 or whatever.
Yeah.
So the new firmware update came on. I tried to, maybe about a week ago, I tried to watch a YouTube video on it when I was down in my basement with my son. And because I just didn't want to fire up the Wii U because it's just, you know. I'd rather do it on my PS4 because it's a nicer interface and everything.
Yeah,
so
much.
So I fired it up and I opened up YouTube and it was just like, you got to do this update. I'm like, all right, cool, go for it. 6.0, that sounds fun. Yeah, do the update. Like, you can't do this update. Like, wait, what? Like, okay, well then, fine.
But you said I have to
skip the update. Go back to YouTube. All right, cool, man. Hey, you got to do this update. Wait a second. We just had this talk. All right, go ahead, do the update. It's like, all right, cool, here's all the information about the update. You can't do this update. Wait a second, what? All right, fine, then back out. Then
shit before.
Then just let me get back to my Horizon game and turn off my system and I'll deal with this later. Okay, cool, but you have to do this update first. No.
You said I can't, though.
So I kept this charade up for a while, and then I was like, I don't know. Then the error message was just like, okay, so why can't I do this update? And the error message was basically, because fuck you.
Because, I don't know, because no.
Because reasons, I don't know, just, you can't do it. Call someone. Damn it.
Don't even call Sony. Call somebody else.
So I was like, all right, I guess I guess something's just wrong with it. I guess that's my luck. And I was sad. And then I looked it
just
up.
Just a glitch in the Matrix, Chris.
Just a glitch in the Matrix. And then I looked it up and it was like, oh no, this is a really common problem. Here's what you do.
Yeah.
So what I had to do was turn off the system entirely and then restart it in safe mode.
Yeah.
To download the update. And then I did that and then it restarted and everything was fine. Except for like, because I really just wanted to try this Soul Calibur 6 demo and I knew it was timed. Like it was a... You know, it was a network test. It's not like, here's a demo, play against the computer. It was like, right. Here's your network test. And I wanted to get in on it because I haven't played Soul Calibur in years. And I loved the first two Soul Calibur games and Soul Blade. Absolutely loved those games. So I got that cooking. And then it just started telling me again, we can't download this update. I'm like, good, because it's already on the system, you jackass. It's like, no, really, we can't download this. I don't know what the problem is. I don't know what you're going to do. I'm like, well, I'm just going to ignore these messages and keep playing because I already did the update, you jackass. Because
I already did it.
So eventually the system caught up with itself and realized that it was already updated. And I got to download the Soul Calibur demo the next day because I couldn't freaking find it the first day.
Yeah, it was not very well labeled.
Because you have to search Soul Calibur as one word, not two words. Yeah. Because when you search Soul Space Calibur, the game and the ridiculous special edition show up,
yep.
But not the beta test.
Nope.
So
that's smart.
Yeah, that was ridiculous. But I did get it, and I did try it. I had two matches. In the first match, I wound up landing in pretty quickly.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I haven't played Soul Calibur since... I actually played it since 3. I have messed around with 4. I didn't even touch 5.
Right,
but like neither. You know, we've talked about this. 4, I just was so turned off by the Star Wars inclusion, and 3 didn't really, you know, make my toes curl all that much. I brought it home. I played it enough to unlock Li Long as the like costume version of him or whatever, like the,
right.
Out of the creator player mode because it's better than nothing because I love Li Long. But 2, 1, and 2 were the ones that I spent unreasonable amounts of time with. So it's been a long time since I played Soul Calibur. Now I was Killik. And I played against Ataki, and I was doing pretty darn well. I was winning, like, just from a general fighting standpoint. But then he started busting out super moves, and I don't know how to do those.
Yeah.
So I'd be like, I'd hit him, and he'd block, and he'd do this, like, crazy cinematic thing. And then he'd go into this other crazy cinematic, and there goes, like, a third of my health, and I'm dead.
Yeah.
And I'm like, all I had to do was kick him in the shins one more, and I've won this round. So... I don't know how to do super moves, so I lost. That was the end of that. And then I couldn't get into another match for a long time. I switched characters over to... Who did I pick? I played against Zasalamel, and I picked... Oh, I picked Siegfried, because I love Siegfried.
Yeah.
I love Siegfried and his giant, stupid sword. And I just whooped his butt. I felt pretty good about that. It's like, all right, I still got it to an extent. It was really weird... That muscle memory coming back. Seriously, I was like doing some of the moves I used to do with Killik weren't the same. Like I very distinctly remember one of my favorite opening things with Killik was the just big giant stabby where he just grabbed the end of his pole and just went straight out and would knock you back.
Yeah.
And it was like 50% of the time whoever was playing against just wouldn't see it coming because it's so stupid to open with that. It's like, what are you going to do? If I block that, you're in serious trouble. But right. if you don't assume I'm that stupid, then then you're going to get knocked back and I'm already off to a great advantage. I can get another hit and while you're down on the ground or whatever. But it wasn't done the same way. I couldn't find that move. And the other one was on the controller. It was on the Dreamcast controller. It was whatever buttons triangle and circle were. If you pressed, forward and triangle circle, whatever they were, equated to on Dreamcast, Killik would do this awesome like kick, like cartwheel on his stick, and it was a really great combo opener. And that wasn't working the same way in this. But that said, I was able to kind of pick up a lot of the little things that I would do, like that cool move where he takes his stick and just jams it back and forth real quick.
Yeah,
that stuns people. So I was able to pick up a lot of that kind of stuff and remembering how to play a game because I haven't played a 3D. I realized. It wasn't just Soul Calibur I haven't played in that long. 3D Fighters I haven't played in that long.
Yeah.
So really getting used to moving around and trying to attack it from different angles and do grabs and stuff from different angles just to throw them off It took some getting used to, but it was really fun. It felt a little, and I don't know if I can blame this on the game or if it's just the was my network connection, but something about it felt like the inputs felt a little bit less precise, a little bit more stiff. I don't want to say chunky or laggy, but it was a bit more stiff than I remember Soul Calibur being. You know, Soul Calibur 2 was smooth as butter. Like, that game was very, very fluid. And this one felt a little bit more, just a tiny bit more stiff. But again, that could have just been my network connection.
Yeah, I think it depends on who you might have been matched up with and like what the parameters of that matchmaking was. Because I certainly had most of the matches that I played a ton of this over the weekend. And I found like once I put all of the matchmaking things to any, I got a lot more matches a lot quicker. Cause like the first time I booted it up, I was like, all right, fuck, I'm so excited about this. Can't wait. I'm going to sit down, pick Mitsurugi. All right, I'm ready to go. Match up 4 bars, same region. All right, let's go. Let's do this. Jump in. And okay. So it's been like 5 minutes since I've gotten a match. Like, well, it's just a network demo. Maybe not a lot of people downloaded it. Maybe. I'm sure it'll be better when it releases. 10 minutes. Okay. This isn't great. Like, oh.
I had my Switch next to me and I was playing a different game while this
Playing Puzzle and Dragons on my phone while I was waiting for this to connect. But like once I knocked all the stuff down to any, I got matched up all the time very quickly, and most of the matches that I had played really, really well. Like no sluggishness of the controls, no like stuttering or frame skipping or anything like that. It played really, really well. I did get my ass handed to me when I was Mitsurugi though, which I found weird because I'm really good with Mitsurugi, but most of the stuff that I was really good with was really easily countered. So maybe I'm not as good with Mitsurugi as I thought I was. But once I switched to Sofitia, that I just started running the table. She is so fun to play, and especially in this game, she just plays so damn well. And like, not for nothing, this game is gorgeous.
It was quite pretty, yes, quite pretty.
Like they all move really well. I was really, really impressed. Like I was on the fence about this game. I now want to buy this game.
Yeah, the thought had crossed my mind. If I had to pick, I'd probably still pick FighterZ just because I really want that game. If I had to get a fighting game,
you're gonna like it as much as you think, though.
I really enjoyed playing the demo. Like, I like the fighting system, and I just love looking at it. So, I mean, I'll play through the single player mode and call it a day because I'm not gonna play it online much. I'm really just gonna get this thing. I'm gonna play through that ridiculous story mode, and that's probably all I'm gonna get out of it. But I'm gonna be really happy about it.
So. Yeah, that's fair.
And that's exactly what I'd do with Soul Calibur 6. If I were to get it, the only trouble is that, you know, again, it's getting a game that's tethered to this system that's in my basement that I can't take with me and play everywhere. And
right.
God, if Soul Calibur 6 was on Switch, that would make the decision a little bit easier. I probably would go with Soul Calibur over Dragon Ball. Maybe. Ah, this is such a tough call. Because I loved Soul Calibur so much, and I had a lot of fun with this, and I really wish I had a little bit more time with it so I could have like played Voldo. I really wanted to play Voldo again.
I played a couple matches as Voldo. He is just as ridiculous and prone to, like, I know high-level Voldo players will scoff at the idea of button mashing with Voldo, but I was never a high-level Voldo player and found that I could still win if I button mashed, so that's what I did.
He's so hard to predict, and like
for me too, I have no idea what he's gonna do.
Yeah, obviously if you know him, he becomes more easy to predict, but like it's one of those situations where if you're playing against somebody who's not, you know, at relatively high level play and they look at Voldo, they're just like, I don't know what this guy's gonna do because his attacks all are so unconventional, you know, like they like here's his kick and it's not gonna land where you think it's gonna land because he's so freaking bizarre, and like and now he's crab walking. So I don't know what's gonna happen.
Yeah,
now he's on his hands, and he's...
Why is he backwards?
He's thrusting at the sky. I don't know what's happening right now. I've never really been into Sofitia either. Sofitia, if I had to play a character with that moveset, it was always Lizard Man. Just for the hilarity of Lizard Man.
Oh, sure. I would much rather be Lizard Man, but he wasn't. Yeah. Was but not in the beta test.
I was never really into her moveset. I was was there a Huang like character that I didn't see?
I don't think
Huang,
so.
Because I loved Huang, and who was the Xiang Hua was similar to Huang.
Yeah.
Although I didn't really like her. I liked Huang's weapons better. Xiang Hua was weird. She reminded me a lot of Sakura and Street Fighter, who was another character. It just kind of bugs me, but
yeah. No, this was awesome, and missing a couple of those types of characters, but definitely something.
Yeah, I mean, I'm sure they're going to be either in the game or DLC for the game, because that's another piece of this that's like, this game's going to get DLC'd. It's going to be like, right, here's your next character pack for $20 or whatever. Yep. So maybe I will just wait until there's a complete version, which is kind of where I was almost landing on FighterZ, because I'm short on cash and there's only so many games that I can afford to get right now.
Right.
And FighterZ just had to go on the back burner, especially considering like, well, I would want all the characters, but I'm not buying all the DLC packs, you know?
Right.
The game's already like $60. But I want to play as like regular Goku with like the Kaioken attack and all that stuff. Mm-hmm. You know, that's what I want to play as. I'd really just want to play with like Saiyan Saga DBZ characters, and I really wish there was a character for Tien that made him look like his green outfit, not the Dragon Ball Super outfit, which is awesome, but I'd like the option to go in the other route. But all right, I'm delving a little bit too deep into that.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So Soul Calibur 6, super awesome. Another thing that I started playing this week that was kind of unexpected. I was looking for something to do in between The Messenger and Mega Man 11. Mega Man 11 also came out today. I bought it. I'll talk about that in a minute. What I wound up getting was a bunch of the Nicholas stuff went on super sale. So I finally picked up Cave Story on the Switch. And I haven't played Cave Story since right around the 3DS launch when they did the Cave Story 3D, which I did like, but I would have much rather, it felt cramped on the tiny screen. It looked like it would have worked a hell of a lot better on a, you know, blown up on a full TV screen, not just on the regular 3DS, because this was before even the XL came out. So it just didn't work as well as I wanted it to. But it was a really neat remake of that game. So when they announced Cave Story was coming out for Switch for, I think it was like $30 or something, I was like, you gotta be kidding me. Like, Cave Story is not a very long game. And it was $10 on Wii, and people freaked out about that because it was free on PC. So
yeah, there's 30 really bucks. Not 30 bucks worth of game in there.
So I just assumed like, well, I mean, if it's 30 bucks and you get like the you know, Cave Story Plus and an HD version of that 3D remake, well, then that'd be worth the money, but it's not. It was just Cave Story. And I was like, well, fine, screw you then. I'm not buying it.
I really
want this game on my Switch, but I just can't justify spending that much on Cave Story, as much as I really love that game. So it went on sale for $15. And I was like, all right, 15, that's fair. I'll do that. Sign me up. Let's do it. So I downloaded Cave Story for $15, and I've never played this game in HD. Realizing, you know, as soon as I booted it up, I was like, oh my god, this is really, really pretty. Oh yeah, this was on Wii. That was the last time I played this on a TV, was on the original Wii. So now I'm playing it in HD, and I'd have to go back to the Wii version to really double check these things. But there's a lot of really subtle effects that I don't remember being in the other game, like the way water moves when you jump into it, or when you fire a weapon, there's like light around it that kind of, you know, distorts the background and whatnot. There's a lot of really small touches, and God, I forgot just how much I really, really love this game. Just the music, the weirdo little story, and just similar to Kiro Blaster, how it's like, this is just really, this is insanely anime, but it's also going to be like vaguely touching from time to time. And God, this game just put me in my happy place. I was so happy when I started playing it. And I still am, but then Mega Man 11 came out today, so I'm not going back. I'm probably not playing anything else until I've completed Mega Man 11 on maybe Master Mode. I haven't tried it yet. So you didn't get this yet, right?
No, not yet.
Okay. I pre-ordered the Amiibo edition from GameStop, which when I pre-ordered it for some stupid reason was not available for in-store pickup. So I had them mail it to me, which is not showing up until tomorrow. Because
so,
that's why I pre-ordered it, right? So I could get it a day after everyone else.
So I could get it a day late.
And like originally it was not coming until Friday. And I was like, well, I'm not happy. I'm not happy because I'm a huge Mega Man fan.
Right.
And so then now it says it's coming tomorrow, which is great. And because I'm impatient, and even though I knew I wasn't going to get more than like 20 minutes to play the game tonight because we're recording and I had to put the kids to bed. I still went over to Best Buy, bought a copy of the game, and kept my receipt. So when my copy shows up tomorrow, I'll take the sealed copy out of the one I've got at GameStop and return it to Best Buy.
Because you're a ridiculous human.
I needed to have Mega Man 11 on day one. You know, I'm returning a sealed copy of the game, no harm, no foul.
Mm-hmm.
And I got to keep my Amiibo.
Unless they listen to this podcast and then retroactively, void your return.
Yeah, I doubt it.
Yeah, I mean, probably not, but...
When I bought the game at Best Buy, the guy who was bringing it up to the register was like, oh, Mega Man, huh? Never really liked Mega Man that much. I just couldn't get into it. It's one of those old games, just like, just never really clicked with me. And I'm like, well, clearly I like it because I'm buying it.
Yeah.
Where do you expect
this conversation is going to go, sir?
You trying to talk me out of this? Like, I could go to Target. This was an easier parking lot to get into, so this is why I'm here. So I fired it up a little bit when my kids were still awake, and I was sitting on the couch with Ellie playing it, and we watched a little cinematic in the beginning, which is kind of cheap looking. I love the voice acting. It is the right kind of cheesy. Mm-hmm. It's not Mega Man 8. Oh my God, who did this? Cheesy. Right. It's like just cheesy voice acting. And I'm so there for that. It looks wonderful. In the demo, just playing Blockman stage was one thing, but really seeing, Wily's spaceship and just, Dr. Light's lab. And the cinematics play out like Mega Man cinematics. Like it's just all this in-game quote-unquote sprites standing there talking to one another, but it's all voice acted, and it's like, I don't know, it really was working for me. I've only played one stage so far, and Ellie picked it. She picked Torchman stage.
Okay.
Which is so not what I expected, because I'm figuring I kind of stopped watching the character trailers. It's like, I just want to see it in the game. I don't care. I'm sold. You don't need to sell me on this game. I'm buying it.
Right.
So I had no idea what Torchman stage was going to be, but I just kind of figured it was going to be some fire stage like they usually are. But it's a summer camp. It's like you get there and there's all these like robot tents that you shoot and they fall over and there's like robot rabbits inside of them. It's like, what the hell is this? This is amazing. I don't even think I made it halfway through the stage, and I played it several times. Like I went right back to it. As soon as the kids went down to bed, I ran right downstairs and got right back into it, and it kicked my ass, man. But in like not an unfair sort of way. Like every time I died, I was like, I see the exact path that I need to do, and right. It doesn't seem that hard. I just need to master actually doing it.
Right, I'm just not good enough yet.
Yeah, exactly. I just haven't nailed this yet. So you go through this like, summer camp type section, and then you get to this part where the woods get kind of dark, and there are these owls that are also flaming lanterns that fly up top, and they keep dropping fire on you. But if you shoot them, then everything goes black and you can't see the ground. And we've seen this trick before in Mega Man games. But what's cool about this is that your buster actually lights up the ground enough for you to see. Keep shooting, and there's just a very, very vague light so you can see the outline of the platforms, which is really neat.
That's great.
You also get to these segments where there's just a huge insta-kill forest fire chasing you. So you just, like, you get there, and it's just like, oh, look, wall of fire. That's going to kill me instantly, and it did.
And I'm dead.
So that was fun. I got to the second one of those where you had to, like, start doing some tricky stuff, like sliding, and I just didn't do it in time, and that was the last life I had, because I lost most of my lives on the mini boss, which was super cool. It's this flaming bird, and it has a pretty predictable pattern. It's just like, I don't know why I kept losing to him, because I knew exactly what he was going to do over and over again. I just kept not dodging it. It just was going, it just wasn't clicking with me for some reason. But you fight him a bunch, and then eventually his fire goes out, and then you keep fighting him a little more, and then one of those owl guys flies by and drops fire on him, lights him back up, which was super cool. But I did eventually beat him, and what was awesome was the whole time I'm fixating on him, because the character design is awesome, and the flames look awesome, like really huge props to the art direction in this game. So I blew him up, and I was just about ready to move on to the next screen and then I noticed the background, which I didn't even notice the entire time because I was fixated so much on the fight. And the background is a bunch of Mets sitting around a campfire, swaying back and forth to the stage music. And it was like, it's all in the distance. It's gorgeous. And I snapped a quick video of it on my Switch because I just wanted to play it back again. It was so awesome. So I'm really, really thrilled with this game. It feels exactly what I thought of the demo. I'm more impressed with Torchman stage than I was with Blockman stage. Like, this feels like a modern Mega Man game, and it's still very much a retro Mega Man game. I know a handful of the reviewers are giving this game a lot of crap for not reinventing the wheel and not, like, really making a crazy new, it's not breaking the rules and reinventing Mega Man. It's like, well, that's not what we want. Yeah. Maybe someday, but it's been since Mega Man 8 since there was an actual modern take on this formula.
Right.
How about we lay some groundwork and take it from there?
Well, yeah, like, the next Mega Man game that, like, breaks the mold is not going to be Mega Man 11 or 12 or 13 or whatever. It'll be Mega Man ZX7.
Yeah, it'll be
fucking
some other
come up with
weirdo offshoot.
Yeah.
And you never know. Maybe it will be 12. Maybe they will break the mold in 12 and still make it feel like a Mega Man game. But as of right now, this is the perfect Mega Man game that I could ask for. It's exactly what I wanted. Granted, I've only played technically two stages so far, but yeah, no, I'm very, very happy with it.
Well, good. I'll be getting that at some point, along with Castlevania Requiem, which is not coming out on the Switch for some reason.
Yeah, did we talk about this last week? I can't remember. Mm-hmm. I was talking to somebody about it. It's apparently Sony has something to do with it existing in the first place.
Oh, well,
which
kind of makes sense. Yeah. Sony is opening up crossplay with.
Yeah, they're opening up crossplay with Fortnite. Here's the thing. The fact that this is like Sony needed to contact Konami to make this happen in the first place
shows you how far out of touch Konami is.
Seriously, it's like, hey, Konami, you know what you should really be doing right now? Like, I would love to know how the conversations went with getting Castlevania in Smash Brothers. It was probably like, hey, so we've been doing this for a while. Can we use Castlevania? And they were probably just like, huh? What? Yeah, sure. Go ahead.
What's a Castlevania?
Sir, that's one of our most popular intellectual properties.
Is
oh,
it?
Yeah.
No shit.
Sure. Go ahead. $50. $5 a song. Go crazy. Hey, can we use stuff from any Castlevania game? Yeah, sure. Go crazy.
Yeah, whatever. How about, we probably have like, what, two?
Something like that. I don't know. So they do that. They do that whole trailer for Castlevania and Switch. And there's an army of younger Nintendo fans being like, wait, who's Richter? I've never heard of Richter before. Like, well, as a matter of fact, Richter is the star of, and then you put Symphony of the Night and Rondo of Blood on the Switch,
hey,
and you make a crap load of money.
Yeah.
And you put it on all platforms because it should just be there, but it's not.
It should be.
And now I'm really, I'm not even sold on getting Requiem for PS4 because, I mean, I could just boot it up on my PS3 or my Vita or even my PS1 for crying out loud if I really wanted. I have no shortage of ways to play Symphony of the Night and Rondo of Blood on my TV. Like,
right.
I can do that right now. What I want out of Symphony of the Night at this point is something that mashes together all the extra content from the Saturn version and improves all the playability, because the Saturn version had this cool extra content, you know, being able to play as Maria and like the whole extra area, but it also had a lot of visual problems that were not there in the PlayStation 1 because the Saturn just couldn't do those really awesome effects. And the PlayStation 1 has some weird slowdown from time to time. It's like, can I just get a really nice, tight remaster? I don't need a remake. I don't need a polygonal or anything. All the art is flawless the way it is. Just get me a really nice, all-encompassing remaster of Symphony of the Night. And I don't know if that's what this version is.
It claims to be?
It claims to be some sort of, in some way enhanced. But yeah. I haven't seen anything that confirms that it is any sort of, that it incorporates the Sega Saturn environments and that extra stuff. So until I know what it is, I'm just going to skip it because I don't have any need for it. But
it's $16 if you pre-order it.
Yeah, I could spend that $16 towards the other games that are coming out. So
I mean, sure.
It's just, if it came in some sort of nifty package or something, I don't know. It's just
a steelbook, perhaps, tying it all together.
Oh,
Chris.
Oh, nice.
On that note,
we should take ourselves a break, and then when we come back, we'll hit our feature topic for Geekade's 31 Days of Halloween. We're talking about different Grim Reaper characters that have showed up in video games over the years and why we love and or hate them. So you're listening to the Stone Age Gamer podcast from Geekade.com. Stick around. And now here's a look at some of the other original content available right now at Geekade.com.
First up, Alex Azar usually sticks to the kind of horror that can be found on screens large and small. But for this year's 31 Days of Halloween, he decided to take it up a notch and write about something truly scary. That's right, nothing but Emeril Lagasse coverage. You may think that a Handmaid's Tale costume is the scariest Halloween costume society has barfed on us to date, but you haven't seen anything yet, no sir. Alex takes us back to what used to pass as scary Halloween costumes in the dark days of the past. I've seen the pictures in his article, and I don't think I'll be able to sleep tonight, quite frankly. Don't miss the true horror of Halloween, located in the think tank.
I know you were reading the script and said that you'd seen the pictures, but have you seen the pictures?
No, I haven't.
Oh my god. Next, as you may have noticed, Geekade's 31 Days of Halloween is back! Dan Ryan, that guy, is kicking off 31 days of spooky Halloween content with a truly impressive feat. Each day in October, he claims, he will take a look
Hey now!
He will take a look back at the best horror films of the past 31 years. He starts all the way back in 1987, which saw some truly classic horror greats, including Evil Dead 2, Hellraiser, Monster Squad, Lost Boys, and The Gate. Get your daily dose of Halloween horror with 31 years and 31 days, every day at Geekade.com.
That's right. Putting the pressure on. What I like is that since the pain in the ass-a-thon, not a week has gone by where I haven't talked about The Gate yet. That's making me really happy.
So, it means you're living your best life, man.
I am hashtag PSL. That's best life, I think. I don't know. I'm not hip anymore. I'm an old man. Finally, Chris.
Think that's pumpkin spice latte?
Yeah, that's right. I think. I don't know. Just when you thought you were telling me this, you know, people are telling me all the time, they're coming up to me, maybe in history, that it couldn't get any scarier. Mutant Musings is back, Chris.
It is?
Jonathan and Patty discuss the finales of X-Men Blue and X-Men Gold, the official return of Wolverine, and how Charles Xavier and Lilandra could possibly make a baby bird together. That's right, not a baby, but a baby bird. Tweet, tweet, motherfucker. Neither of our hosts were particularly happy with the trailer for Dark Phoenix, but that's okay, because they spend a lot more time welcoming October by discussing a fun issue of Nova, where the titular hero goes trick-or-treating with some ex-students. Could Pyro and Iceman's couple name be Icy Hot? Could Thunderbird and Blink's couple name be Blunderbird? Find out on Mutant Musings episode 33, Foul Language?
I get it. You can catch all this great stuff, and I do mean great, plus tons of other articles, videos, podcasts, and more right now at Geekade.com. Hey, we're back. Mm-hmm. I didn't even ask Dan. I'm just proclaiming it right now.
That's right. Bathroom breaks? Not on this show.
Not on my watch. I'm sure there's a beer bottle near you somewhere.
There most definitely is several.
take your pick. Because I want to finish this show and play more Mega Man.
Me too.
Yeah. So, for 31 Days of Halloween, we decided that we wanted to talk about our favorite Grim Reapers today. Mm-hmm. Or not even our favorite, just a bunch of Reapers in video games, because it's Halloween and spooky and stuff, so we're going to do this.
And the Grim Reaper is scary.
He is
or
scary.
Or cute, depending on the game you're playing, Chris.
That is true. And honestly, the first one that comes to mind is the Castlevania Grim Reaper, but we'll talk about him in a minute.
Right.
The one after that immediately jumped into my mind was Greg.
Greg, the Grim Reaper.
Greg, the Grim Reaper. When you die and conquers Bad Fur Day, and this tiny little Grim Reaper comes up and says, "Hey, I'm Greg, the Grim Reaper. Don't laugh." Awesome. He's great. Hates cats. Like, he just has this thing against cats, and he wasn't too fond of squirrels either.
No.
If I remember. It has been a long time since I've played this.
There's a lot of cheeky one-liners.
Yes, very much so. The only interaction with him I really remember is the first one. I just freaking love this iteration of death. I love the look of him. He's just so surly and small, and he's got this really high-pitched, helium-y voice. Just wonderful. Just
yeah,
wonderful.
Not scary, even in the least bit. Like, just
full-size death
silly.
Scythe, if I remember correctly.
Yeah.
Like,
oh, yeah.
Super tall, but he's just this little tiny dude.
Well, and it's nice, because so often in video games, when you die, it's just like, you know, game over, or snake! Like, you know, this was cute. I was like, all right, I don't mind.
Yeah, I did not mind that. Made me chuckle. Very similar situation in The Messenger, although the you don't actually die in The Messenger. These little demon things save your life, and then they force you to pay them back.
Naturally.
So every time you die, you get like some, you know, like, "Hey, you probably should have jumped there" message from the game.
Hey, dick.
You did this because you wanted to see me again, right? Like, there's just every time you die, it's another one of those screens. And eventually it gets to a screen that says, "I bet you're just dying over and over again to see when these screens loop" or something like that.
That's funny.
Game's ridiculously self-aware. But no, awesome. Greg the Grim Reaper is one of my all-time favorite iterations of death in the world of video games.
Quite cheeky, quite fun.
Quite. Dan, why don't you pick one from the list?
Let's go with the Grim Reaper in NBA Jam. Because NBA Jam, for those of you who have never played, is just a ridiculously arcadey basketball game. Just 2-on-2, and you know, when you would pop into the local video arcade, for, you know, unbeknownst to your young eyes walking in there, you had no idea that you were going to possibly see Michael Jordan and Scottie Pippen going up against Bill Clinton and Al Gore, because those were unlockable characters in the game if you knew the codes. And there was all types of ridiculous shit in the different NBA Jam games. And one of the characters you could unlock was a b-ballin' version of the Grim Reaper. Which,
and the character shot of Grim Reaper is...
Oh, it's so great.
It's hysterical. It just looks... He doesn't look like any sort of scary Grim Reaper. He just looks like a really poorly put together Grim Reaper mask. I'm looking at gameplay right now. It's like they didn't put a cloak on him or a costume. It's just like they put a hood over the head of the character, and they just made the skin solid black.
Yeah, it's pretty awesome. It's like a really, really shitty Halloween costume version of the Grim Reaper. It's awesome.
It's like Mr. Popo from Dragon Ball in a Grim Reaper mask.
That's pretty damn good.
Oh, that's magical.
Pretty damn good.
That's a piece of magic right there. Well, I'll take the next pick, and I will go with probably my personal favorite iteration of the Grim Reaper is the Reaper and the Reapettes from Kid mm-hmm. Icarus, mm-hmm. and also the Great Reaper from Kid Icarus Uprising. I have an unreasonable love of Kid Icarus. It's my favorite Nintendo franchise.
I don't know that that's unreasonable.
Because, you know, the game's super flawed and there's only three of them. And, mm-hmm. but they're, I love this universe so much. It's, you know, obviously I do like Metroid and Zelda and Mario sure. more, you know, but like just as a world to be in, there's just something about Kid Icarus that always connects with me. And the Reapers are so stupid in this game.
Yeah, they're pretty dumb.
I remember the first time getting to them, and it's just like, oh crap, that's death. He's just walking back and forth. All right. And when I got in front of him, what I was not expecting is for him to completely lose his shit and just start screaming, like, blah! Running back and forth. And then this stupid repetitive music starts playing. These little floating mini Grim Reapers start mm-hmm. coming in from the sides. It's like, oh, okay, this game's crazy. This game's just straight out crazy. I freaking loved them. I love those characters in that. And then again, in Abyss of Monsters, same basic principle. But when they redid them in Kid Icarus Uprising, they just did their freak out animation is even funnier.
Yeah.
God damn, they're so great. And then you eventually fight this super awesome, like giant, great Reaper in Kid Icarus Uprising. Uprising is a great freaking game. Go buy it. Yeah. Probably my favorite video game iterations of the Grim Reaper are of that, because it's just freaking ridiculous.
It's pretty great. And it is like, I mean, because let's be honest, like if you're not playing like Outlast or some of the Resident Evil games, like the concept of death as a character is a little like, okay, it's not, you can try and be scary, but this is just silly. You know, like, which is why I like, you know, the Reaper and the Great Reaper from Kid Icarus and Greg the Grim Reaper. And the next one we'll talk about, Death Jr., an action platformer from Konami where you are just the son of death, I guess.
You are the son of death. That's one of the few things I know about
this game. I don't
remember
the story. I do remember it being a pretty average third-person action game.
This was on PSP, though, right?
It was on PSP.
It was one of those, this was just one of those, hey, check it out. We're doing a 3D platformer on the PSP, and there wasn't a ton of those yet. You know, this was
PSP, we're doing new franchises.
Yeah. Who made this game? This was...
It was Konami.
Konami.
Yeah.
Backbone Entertainment. Boy, there were sequels to this. I know there were.
There were. There was a Wii version, I think.
Goodness gracious.
Am I crazy?
I mean, you are, but I don't think for that reason. I'm trying to find like a list of Death Jr. games. And Death Jr. 2. I think there was a DS version somewhere.
That seems
about there was
right.
like some sort of comic book based on it.
Yeah, the comic book was pretty cool. It had some Mike Mignola looking artwork.
Okay.
Might have even been Mignola. I don't know if it was. I doubt it. But it was a cute little character, and it was a cool little world. Like, it was, you were in the suburbs, like, is where the game starts, I think. Like, if I remember correctly, like, you start off in the suburbs, and, like, you just have to, it was cool. It was cute.
Yeah, I liked the art direction in this, this game. I never got around to actually playing them. Death Jr. 2 Root of Evil was on PSP and Wii.
Yeah, there you go, on the Wii.
Yeah, can't help but feel.
I mean, not
Death Jr. Okay, here we go. Death Jr. That was the Science Fair of Doom. That was the DS game. I liked that. I liked that title.
That's pretty
Death,
great.
Death Jr. Death Jr. 2 Root of Evil and Science Fair of Doom for DS. Neat.
Yeah, I like it. It's cute. Not something to necessarily like run out and like, oh my god, this is the greatest thing ever. But
yeah,
you know,
it's. I don't even think it is a cult classic at this point. It's just
one
of those
so.
forgotten franchises that was just good enough to be decent at the time and then didn't really go anywhere since.
And which, it was, you know, that's fine. Like you said, it was, you know, oh, it's on the PSP and like we're really trying and we're throwing a ton of money at this.
Yeah, like let's make some games. I wanted to talk about, this is one that I was looking up Grim Reaper characters and I was looking at a couple of lists and this one came up once or twice and I totally forgot this character existed. This is Gomez from Majora's Mask.
I have no idea who this even is.
It's just a character that looks like Death. It's kind of a pain in the ass to beat, if I remember correctly.
Mm-hmm.
I have not played through Majora's Mask in a long time, and I should have played through the 3D remake on the Majora's Mask 3D on 3DS because it solved my biggest problem with Majora's Mask, which is that it is ugly as sin.
Yeah.
And the 3D one's kind of nice looking. Think, hey, you clean this up. But unfortunately, it still sounds like Majora's Mask. And while I like the musical compositions, I despise the instrumentation in that game. There's so much of it just kind of leans on that really heavy MIDI sound. That's just the N64 didn't use really good sound samples a lot of time for its music. And no matter how great the composition is, some of the songs just can't overcome that to my ears. And they always bug me.
Yeah,
and
it's those just remakes, not going to sound good.
It's not, and those remakes irked me for that reason, because they were staying so close to the N64 originals, and I think just for no good reason. I mean, Ocarina of Time is like pretty much video game scripture, and
yeah,
I could see where they wouldn't want to mess with that too much, but if you're going to do even like a basic overhaul of the visuals, do a basic overhaul of the music, like they did with the HD games. Like
right.
Wind Waker HD... they redid like a handful of tracks and that was more than enough. You know, that was great. Just do something like that on this, whatever. Someday they'll make proper HD versions of Ocarina and Majora and that'll be great. But yeah, Gomez, is just it's one of the mini bosses in Majora's Mask. It's not even like a full temple boss and, it just looks like the Grim Reaper and it swings a scythe around. And, that's really all I have to say about it.
That's fair. That's fair.
Your
let's,
turn.
Let's talk about Grim Fandango.
Let's talk about Grim Fandango. Probably one of the best games I've never played.
Without question. There is, and we have talked about it before, and you know, when the remastered one came out, I jumped all right back in because I love the world, I love the art direction, you know, Tim Schafer and the whole Double Fine thing, and all of that is great. And the main character, Manny Cavalera, is just so great and so well written and well animated. And I mean, you're a Reaper, but you're a detective in the underworld, and it's just awesome. It is as obtuse as these old point and click adventures could possibly get, because god damn it, were they just about as obtuse as possible. Or
they really were.
Obtuse is the word that I was looking for.
I like obtuse.
They were obtuse and obtuse. I'm sorry. This is a little bit behind baseball right now, or inside baseball. See, I can't even get the phrase right because my neighbors are screaming at each other, and I'm wondering at what point I have to tell you to hold on so I can go tell them to shut the fuck up because my kids are asleep. I mean, it's ridiculous. So, like, I'm
well, I can't hear them.
Oh, that's so good, but like I'm losing my shit as this is happening internally. So just a ridiculously obtuse game, but a great character, a great interpretation of like, okay, if we're going to have Death, right? If we're going to have a Grim Reaper, what might that actually entail? Like, what is the day-to-day life like? And this game did a really nice job of that. And it's a game that I think everybody should play, because it is just so weird and so out there, and the remastered version is just gorgeous.
Well, as soon as that's the remastered version, I think is hitting Switch next year.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm all over that.
And aren't all of them are coming, like Full Throttle and Day of the Tentacle and all that? They're all coming to Switch, right?
I think so. I actually really only paid attention to the Grim Fandango news and kind of. But what you're saying sounds familiar.
I believe it is. Grim Fandango is certainly my favorite out of all of them. The rest
I
are
want
good.
Monkey Island. Switch.
Yeah, damn. Well, yeah.
Monkey Island so badly. I never want to not play that game.
Right. I never want to not be played.
All right, what do we got left here? Paperboy. Did you know the Grim Reaper was in Paperboy?
I did. I vaguely remember as a kid, like, seeing him and being like, what the fuck?
I don't remember if he's in the arcade version. I don't think I've ever seen him in the arcade version, but I definitely remember him in the NES version, and he's just standing there.
Yeah.
Huh.
Oh, my God.
All right. That's...
Why is that there?
Ooh. That's unsettling.
Well, and sort of like in the God of War franchise, when Charon is ferrying you across the River Styx, it's like, shit. This, from the mythology that I've read, this is not a good sign. And, like, you don't fight him.
Well.
And nothing crazy happens. Like, he just kind of talks to you.
I think it's like the first time you fight him, you have to lose, and then you can beat him later in the game.
Something like that.
I have not really played it.
Death has really not been done very well in games, Chris, except for, I think, this last one we're going to talk about.
Yeah, because I'm not going to talk about Darksiders 2 because I've never played it.
Yeah,
I don't
think
you have either.
I played the first one, and it wasn't God of War.
I played Tetris. It wasn't God of War.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know what I was expecting. But
the Grim Reaper in Castlevania is just God.
I mean, still awful. Like,
yeah, but see, I disagree. I love the look of the Grim Reaper.
I do too.
I think that's awesome.
But the voice acting just makes it awful.
Oh, you're thinking Symphony of the Night.
Oh yeah, yeah. 100%.
Ah, Alucard, what is your business here? I've come to put an end to this. Still befriending mortals. I'll not ask you to rejoin our side, but I demand you cease your attack. I will not. God, I love Symphony of the Night.
Oh, it's so great, but makes
Grim Reaper
so not scary.
He's so awesome. Yeah, but like, you really want to kill him because then he steals all your shit and teleports away. Like,
he is a dick.
How dare you?
How very dare you, good sir.
He was also so intimidating in the original Castlevania.
That's true.
God, if you didn't, like, know to get there with holy water and just take care of business, like,
that guy's
just, well, good. There's scythes everywhere. Just everywhere. I'm dead. Dead. Damn it. Now I gotta start over again. Really, just such an awesome game series to have Death in, but I like how Death is, like, Dracula's right-hand man.
It's so awesome
that he's always, like, he's the guy you fight right before Dracula, and that's freaking cool.
Yeah.
I love the look of him in Smash Brothers.
Mm.
That trailer where he just reaps Luigi's soul is, like, freaking terrifying.
Poor Luigi.
It's so weird.
Poor Luigi.
I don't remember we talked about it last week when we were talking about the Nintendo Direct, but, like, that whole sequence kind of... spoiled Luigi's Mansion 3.
Yeah,
and like
a
handful of people kind of caught it. They're like, wait a minute, that's not the right Poltergust. Like, you can't shoot toilet plungers. Is there a new Luigi's Mansion? Nah, there couldn't possibly be. This is just neat. And then sure as shit, there's a new Luigi's Mansion with that Poltergust and the ability to shoot toilet plungers. That was kind of cool. But yeah, nobody's done Death better than Castlevania, as far as I'm concerned, except maybe NBA Jam.
Mm-hmm.
Flawless. Absolutely flawless.
I can't argue with that. There's nothing left to say, Chris.
There is nothing left to say. That's it. So that's our show. It's late. Let's call it. Let's do it.
Done.
Let's call Greg the Grim Reaper and kill
us. That's right.
That is our show.
Jesus.
Join our undead corpses next week when we continue our contributions to Geekade's 31 Days of Halloween with video game bats. We might not actually do this. I'm just saying this right now. Dan hasn't agreed to it, but I think it's a fun idea.
Nope, we're talking about our favorite video game zombies.
Oh, that could be the following week.
We've
got 3 weeks of this to do.
How many bats could we possibly talk about, Chris?
I mean, are you telling me that we couldn't talk about how much the bats in Ninja Gaiden piss us off? I'm willing to call all three games different topics just to cover how much the bats in Ninja Gaiden piss me off.
fine next week video.
I don't know.
Bats.
It could be bats. It could not be bats. I don't know. I mean, it's, I don't know where we're going with this. I'm making stuff up.
You're
There's
driving
bats
me
Spelunker. Oh, ha, ha,
I think you've got bats in the belfry.
Oh,
good sir.
Boy. I'm sure that there are enough video game bats to piss me off. Oh. Just think about it. Think Castlevania, bats, drive it. There are no Medusa heads. And you think that. There are no Medusa heads, and then all of a sudden the bat comes up, knocks you off the platform, you got to start the level over again. This is the kind of conversation we're having next week.
That's right.
Damn
oh,
it.
Oh, I just looked it up. There's a video game for the Amiga, Amstrad, CPC, Atari, Commodore 64, and MS-DOS called Bat.
But I think sold.
All right.
Once again, you can get in touch with us at mailgk.com as well as all
Arrow
flavors
of
social.
Sorry.
Oh, boo. Get. See, yeah. See
God
that?
God damn it, Chris.
It's going to be an episode. It's going to be an episode.
Fine.
You can like us on Facebook, find us on Instagram at Geekade. Subscribe to our YouTube and Twitch channels for all our latest video content, and follow us on Twitter at @_Geekade. You can find us individually on Twitter. I'm at Geekade Chris. That's Geekade KRIS. And Dan is available at Geekade Bat. That's Geekade BAT.
Geekade _B.A.T. At Geekade Dan. There's a game coming out in 2019 for the PC, Mac, and Switch called Batbarian. Like
yes.
Barbarian, but with bats.
Oh my god, I need to see this. If you're interested in more information about anything we discussed here tonight, be sure to emphasis on the word discussed. Be sure to check out our show notes. And while you're at it, you can also subscribe to this and any of our other wonderful podcasts on iTunes, Spotify, or Stitcher, where if you're super nice, you can leave us a review, because any and all feedback is welcome and appreciated. We'd also like to thank our intrepid editor, Evan, for making the show listenable for all you folks. And we'd like to thank Mark TDK Knight for our show's theme. You can check him out on SoundCloud and Bandcamp or his website, which we have a link to in the show notes. Again, always remember to keep your eyes on Geekade.com for even more fresh original content. That's it, everybody. On behalf of Dan and myself, keep playing games.
There's 13 pages on Giant Bomb with the looking up bats.